Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 37. Dave, it's a good day to be a Steeler fan.
Yeah, without a doubt. And if there's any doubt who owns the Pittsburgh Steelers, I would say it's the Rooney family now. You know, regardless of all that stuff that went on this previous week, you know, with the comments that were blown up sort of from Tom Brady, kind of stemming through, you know, before the preseason when he basically told one of his offensive players that, hey, when it comes to the Steelers, don't worry about it. I got it, you know. But evidently Tom Brady doesn't have it. And we'll get into exactly why here. But what a great day. What a great win. Steelers are 6-2, headed up against, you know, they're hitting their stride right at the right time. Have the Ravens coming to town next week.
Yeah, 8:20 on Monday night. It is just, you know, we've pointed this out a couple times now, so it's probably getting old for our listeners. But, you know, if you could draw it up, you would say the Steelers would be 6-2, 7-1 right now. They might have lost on the road to Indianapolis, and maybe they lose a game to the Patriots. But this is right where this team wants to be, and they didn't get there the way kind of a lot of people expected them to get there, and probably not quite how you and I expected them to get there. But the fact is, they are right now where everybody who's a Steeler fan would like them to be. They're playing their best football of the year. The offense has so many weapons. And we are seeing a little bit of a changing of the guard defensively and maybe a little bit offensively, too. We are seeing some changes that, you know, a lot of the guys who have been staples of this team, big parts of the three Super Bowl runs over the last 6 years, are less involved now and maybe less involved going forward. And we're seeing young guys get time, maybe more time than Mike Tomlin and the coaching staff would have liked. But early returns, pretty good.
Without a doubt. And he made sure he praised those young kids yesterday twice during the press conference after the game. And that being, of course, Cortez Allen, Chris Carter, and Stevenson Sylvester. And although Sylvester didn't play a lot of snaps, really didn't. He looked a little uncomfortable at times. But, hey, that's, you know, you need those kids to see time in these games. And although, like you said, they probably didn't plan to have to play these kids this much in this game, but due to injuries and all, you could see this thing coming. And you know, I'm going to take full opportunity to pat myself on the back here because, you know, we basically had called this thing, you know, ahead of time there too. And people will say, well, you're just a homer picking them and all like that. There was good reason to have optimism heading into this game, especially kind of doing, I kind of tweeted on Twitter last night. It's a shame that James Harrison has been out all this time with the injury to the, you know, fractured orbital bone and all. But what it allowed Dick LeBeau to do is start implementing things leading up to this game and into more things that we'll probably see next week as well. And that, of course, is we saw a lot of big nickel for a while with Monday in there as a sixth defensive back. And then against the Cardinals last week, we saw Cortez Allen hit the field in some traditional nickel with six defensive backs. And that's what LeBeau broke out yesterday. I had a feeling he would to counteract Wes Welker and Rob Gronkowski and all like that, and it worked absolutely perfect.
Yeah, it couldn't have been better the whole game. I mean, let me get my my one point that people may jump on here and say, as good as Ben was, Ben didn't throw the ball particularly well yesterday. Ben did a lot of things exceptionally well. Most importantly, identifying the blitz, identifying the underneath reads, finding the hot guys when he had to, and he played a very good game. But he was not particularly accurate throwing the ball. He was threw a lot of balls behind guys. Guys made some nice catches. Antonio Brown made another crazy good catch. Heath Miller made some nice catches. The thing that's, you look at the numbers and you see Ben is 36 for 50 or whatever he was exactly for 365 and a couple touchdowns. He can play better, and this team can still play better. And like you said, defensively, I love the fact, I mean, if you're a Steeler fan and you've been watching this team, you get disappointed at times when they play the Saints and when they played the Packers in the Super Bowl and obviously the Patriots last year, that they don't go to some press coverage. And, you know, kudos to guys like William Gay and Keenan Lewis. William Gay has become a much better football player over the past year. Ike Taylor was his usual great self yesterday. We saw the scheming, different things in the scheme, and I'll give you props for that. You made that call earlier in the week that you would be surprised if Ike Taylor didn't follow Welker around. I wasn't sure if they'd do that since he comes out of the slot so much, but it really was a fun day to be a Steeler fan. You know, being at the game, as I told you before we got on here, sitting up there with my brother and a couple friends, and you know, in the third quarter of still a reasonably contentious game when they play Renegade, that place got so loud, and Steeler fans were really into it yesterday. I'm sure they'll be really into it next Sunday night against the Ravens, but it was a fun time.
Yeah, let's hit on a couple of things that you just said there. Roethlisberger, 36 of 50, and he was a little low on some balls. He realistically, you know, he could have completed probably another eight balls on top of what he had. So you're talking about a crazy stat of maybe something like a 44 for 50 or something like that, and easily a 400-yard game on top of it is the first thing I want to hit on. Second of all, you do sit kind of up high, and that kind of gives you a good vantage point. I kind of liken it to having that all 22 view, if you will. Did you see, especially in that first quarter there, I won't actually get to see until some of this coach's tape comes out and we get some all 22 view. We're kind of at the mercy of the regular TV views right now until this comes out later in the week. But, you know, how far did you see them protecting against the deep ball early on, and how much room up underneath did Brown, Sanders, and more especially Heath Miller on that first drive?
You saw that opening drive, and you know, if you watch the tape, you see that the Patriots blitzed a lot early coming off the edge, particularly off the right edge. They weren't getting there. This is when Ben did a really good job of identifying the right reads. You know, it's interesting that the Steelers ran a lot of formation where they had the two wide receivers, or oftentimes it was Heath and a receiver, or sometimes it was a back that we saw with Melody Moore, where they literally had the second guy trailing the first receiver, running essentially the same pattern right behind him. We saw it with Moore on the touchdown. One of Heath Miller's early catches over the middle, Manny Sanders ran a little short route that he could have thrown to Sanders. Miller was further down the field, and it's great to watch when you see it, because Sanders goes flying down the field, running past Heath Miller, ready to pick off a DB. Unfortunately, the tackle happened right about when he got to where the play was interacting. But fun stuff seeing that. You pointed out that Sanders gets the nod over Antonio Brown because of his blocking. And you see those things in the game. You see those guys make little plays like that. Didn't even actually come to fruition, but it was just fun stuff to watch. And, yeah, they were definitely watching Wallace deep. Mike didn't run a lot of streak routes yesterday. You know, they played a lot of umbrella coverage, and that's why the middle of the field was so open.
Yeah, and, you know, we had kind of touched about this earlier in the week, how Mike Tomlin, you know, he praises the other team every Tuesday. I mean, it gets sickening sometimes as he goes through the entire roster and pretty much praises everybody. He tried to say, hey, the Pats defense or the defense in general is not a 32nd-ranked defense. A lot of reasons they give up so many passing yards because they're blowing people out. And I did a post earlier in the week where I blew that basically out of the water. Now, you fully expect Tomlin to make, you know, not come out and say, hey, they pretty much suck in coverage. But, hey, the truth is the truth there, and this Pats defense is not good whether they have the lead or if they're in a close game, especially the pass defense goes. And let's throw on top of it that they out of the blue kind of they released Lee Bodden on Friday, I think.
What was that all about?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, they just signed a kid to a big contract, you know. You would think the way the rest – yeah, I can understand it maybe if the rest of the secondary was playing good.
Sure.
You know, but they're not. And then that kid, the injury, Rozai Dowling, the guy who going into the draft, you know, the big knock on him was the injury concerns and able to stay healthy. Well, they ended up having to place him on IR Friday as well, and they just were a mess. I think they had Anquan Moldon as a nickelback, and then they pulled him out early in the game and swapped in the other guy there for a while. They were just a mess in the secondary, and they had no answer. And as you put it, Roethlisberger just marched them on down the field. What a good sign, too. The Pats deferred, which was good news. The Steelers were able to go down the length of the field, punch it in. The defense comes out and causes a three and out with two base formations. formations there to start things off. The Pats go three and out. The Steelers get the ball back, and the only way that could have been better is if they would have punched it in for seven instead of three there. But what a fantastic start of the game when Brady can't not hurt you when he's standing on the sideline.
Yeah, I mean, it's so fun to see him go into that second quarter knowing that basically the Patriots had run three plays at that point. Their second drive, they did a little better. They ran eight plays in that second drive. But, yeah, great stuff from the start. you know, just kind of just in terms of overarching things that were about the game that kind of I thought Rashard Mendenhall, I thought Ed Bouchette was really way too hard on Rashard Mendenhall after last week's game. He certainly was not particularly productive against Arizona. The running game wasn't particularly productive until the last drives. But against this defense, Mendenhall did a really nice job of hitting the holes, hitting them aggressively when he had to. And there are times when he had to dance a little bit. There are times when those holes weren't there and he made something out of nothing. And then what he does, what he loves to do and what he really does do well is bounce stuff outside. And he was able to do that a few times and get some 10 and 15 yard gains, finished with over 5 yards a carry. A nice effort for him. We talked about all the receivers getting involved, Ben really distributing the ball well. And then, you know, really there's no question that the key and the focus of our talk today is how good the defense was without James Harrison, without James Ferrier, without Aaron Smith, without Lamar Woodley for part of the game, although Woodley was fantastic while he was in there. It's fun to see, and it certainly makes you excited, not only for kind of the next eight games in the playoffs, because I think the Steelers have pretty much secured the fact they're going to be in the playoffs, but the future now all of a sudden looks pretty good too.
Yeah, when you get these young kids involved this early, especially Cortez, because, hey, we were all worried about Cortez heading into the season. You know, there were some good arguments that he wouldn't even made the 53, you know, based on all the time he was injured and all like that. But he really has come along very quickly. What was interesting is both he and Mundy seemed to have a lot of the coverage in the slot on Gronkowski when he lined up in there, and they did a real good job on him in there. And of course, Keenan on the outside. This was a year that we were really hoping, hey, it's time for him to turn the corner. He certainly has. The touchdown he gave up to Branch on the short field there, that's just so hard to defend, and that was
that's impossible to defend.
Right, that was a perfect ball thrown outside where only Branch was going to catch that ball. And you know, the Steelers, the defense. Defense there, it's not their fault they were working on a short field there. One of the bad balls that Roethlisberger threw all day to Gary Guyton there, I think he saw him there. I think he just didn't put enough zip on it or didn't get rid of it, you know, a second and a half earlier than he probably would have liked to there. But, it's fun to watch these kids get involved there. I thought a real telling shot there was when Woodley was out of the game. I think Ike Taylor went down with that stinger at the time there. Woodley walks on the field and is just basically coaching Chris Carter up at that time there, you know, and you know, you don't see that on a lot of teams, and it shows you the unity, and they know that this kid's going to be the future. The kid has a very strong motor on him. He still needs to get a little bit stronger. He needs to develop a kind of an inside move on top of it, but when he was lined up on the right side against one of those run plays, Gronkowski came out to block him there, and he just basically threw Gronkowski to the side and swallowed up Falk on that play there. So that's the type of stuff that you want to see from your young kids on your draft picks in the first year. And you know, linebacker in the Dick LeBeau's 3-4 defense is no cupcake. Neither is the secondary for that most, as far as that goes. And I think it played to the advantage, letting those young guys just play man up underneath there.
Yeah, definitely some good stuff there and all that stuff. And I think the whole secondary played well. Troy made some important tackles. He was certainly a factor in terms of how they were scheming things, moving him around, often coming off the edge. It looked like at times he was spying, whether it was a running back who may come out of the backfield or waiting for the little soft drag routes that the Pats love to run. He just was kind of hanging around the line of scrimmage. And, you know, that's always I certainly like it better when Troy's down in the box doing those types of things. And it's just a really good scheming. I'll tell you the one thing that you were talking about, Woodley coming out and coaching up Chris Carter. That was great to see. I will also tell you, at the, I think it was the end of the third quarter when the Steelers were changing ends, the offense was on the field, and Ziggy Hood came running out on the field, jumping up and down, literally to the middle of the field, and high-fived all the Steelers' offensive linemen, and then ran back off the field. It was one of the best things. I'm sure that, you know, they didn't catch that on television.
No, they didn't.
We were dying laughing. Ziggy was so, you know, these guys, you just see how pumped up the guys were about playing in the game and about how things were going, and the offense was putting together a nice drive there. And, yeah, so Ziggy got out and got involved.
Yeah, and he quietly had a good game, you know, from pressure on that left side there. Boy, Brett Kiesel, I've worried about this guy the last few weeks, as many snaps as he's had to take over there on that side, because we haven't seen a lot of Cameron Hayward through this time ever since Aaron Smith went down and since Chris Hoke's been down with that stinger as well. But, man, he looks fresh. He looks like he did 4 or 5 years ago, the jump that he's getting off the ball there and those 9-foot arms that he has there. He knocked, you know, of course, he tipped the ball early in the game of Brady's, and then on that last series, they're getting in there and knocking the ball out of Brady's hands. And what a heads-up play by Troy Polamalu there on that fumble. You know, that very easily could have been recovered by the Pats offensive lineman there, and Troy had no chance of recovering it, but he had enough sense about him to dive ahead and just punch the ball towards the Patriots end zone. And that.
Well, and Dave, I was saying on that play that's illegal, right? I mean, isn't this exactly what they talked about, you know, the famous game with the San Diego Chicken and Madden against the Chargers, and basically Stabler kicks it and rolls it, and Casper ends up kicking it into the end zone and recovers it for a touchdown. I thought what Troy did was actually illegal.
Well, I think that applied. That's a holy roller rule, you know, to the offense, yeah, especially inside of 2 minutes here. I don't think that has anything to do with the defense there. And how can they not, you know, that's a hell of a damn judgment call, even though it's obvious what he was trying to do.
Well, no, in that way, it was obvious, but yeah.
You know, but I mean, heck, you're just trying to keep the ball alive defensively. The offense cannot move the ball forward that way by shoving it forward there. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't think there's a rule up against that. And it was a heads up play just to keep the ball moving, the clock moving. And plus you gave the defense a chance to, recover it. Or if the Patriots do recover it, they're even further back in his end, but that's a heads up play, there. And it killed enough clock that the Pats, you know, had to try a onsides free kick, which you don't see too many of those in the NFL there, you know,
yeah.
For sure. And their onsides kick, they did not execute after their last touchdown on top of it. I thought the officiating could have been a little bit better in that game. Let's start with the William Gay pass interference call kind of early in the game. Yeah, Gay might have, I could see where it might have you know, demanded a flag there, but the flag came in, it seemed like a full 20 seconds almost after the play ended. And then,
yeah, I didn't understand how that flag comes in so late.
Yeah, and then
right against the Patriots sideline too.
Yeah, and then you know, the Gronkowski, one of the catches there down late on their last scoring drive there, he was in the end zone. It was kind of if you kind of remember the play a couple of years back with Santonio Holmes against the Ravens.
Yeah, in Baltimore, right?
You know, Belichick though, hey, that's on him. He didn't challenge it. He claimed he didn't have enough a good enough view on that, and didn't want to burn a timeout. Now they ended up scoring, but they ended up wasting a little bit more time off the clock in the process there. So
that was a bad call by the ref. He was right there to see that play. And, you know, from where I sit, I didn't get a great view of it, but I certainly thought it could have been a touchdown. And I was surprised, having seen the replays now, that the ref missed that call as well. There was also another, the Ryan Clark personal foul. I didn't get a great look at it. If they were calling helmet to helmet contact, then that's fine. I don't have a judgment on that. If they were calling it a late hit because Gronkowski was out of bounds, that's a bad decision, because he basically shrugged off one Steeler defender and was running 1 foot in, 1 foot out for two steps there. And I didn't see any way they could call that a late hit on Clark.
Well, Ryan did have one that when you go back and watch it, he did make a stupid play on that, I think.
Is that the play with Gronkowski on the
sideline? Yeah. And he'll get fined for that. Chris Kimoto had another hands to the face, which was pretty blatant on that. He's gonna be docked once again for that. I'm kind of curious if Troy's going to get a nice little envelope on Tuesday, too, for that kind of that neck tackle on Wes Welker that twist.
You know, I saw that, and I've seen that play a few times now, and I'm pretty convinced he got his shoulder and got his, you know, didn't get any part of the headgear or inside the shoulder pads. But yeah, that was definitely borderline.
Yeah, it's going to be curious to see. I mean, if they do, I just wouldn't be surprised. Do I think he should get fined for that? Absolutely not. But it would not surprise me the way we've seen some of these fines go this year. That he will, you know, indeed probably. Well, I don't know how much confidence I have that he will, but it would not surprise me, I should say. But, you know, they did a good job of getting pressure up the middle. I think they blitzed on about half the plays. Even Brady, you know, they had a full, you know, this is a Patriots team coming off the bye week, had plenty of time to prepare. That's why half of Steeler Nation was so down, you know, didn't think we had a chance in this game whatsoever. But you know what? Brady even admitted that they played more man than what they've shown on tape. And Ryan Clark's said after the game, that's the most man coverage they've played in years. So, you know, hats off to Dick LeBeau. You knew that they couldn't go into this game doing the same old thing that they've done in the past, and that's pretty much playing nickel and blitzing off the edges there. So they really corrected. And, hey, and let me tell you this, man. The demise of the Patriots is here because their receiving core is not that great. Once you get past Wes Welker, Deion Branch is just an average. I mean, he's definitely serviceable.
He is an average NFL receiver, and their tight ends are great.
Right, their tight ends are great, but if they lose Welker or if they lose Gronkowski for any extended time, they are done because Ocho Cinco's done. It would not surprise me if they release him by the time the season ends because, and we already discussed their secondary being bad. All these draft picks that we've been kind of jealous of over the last few seasons that Belichick trades down, picks up draft picks. You know, it seems like every year they have a 10 or 11 draft picks, it seems like. They've done absolutely nothing with it, at least from what we're seeing right now on paper. They're Tom Brady, Wes Welker, and the two tight ends right now, and that's it. If they lose any piece of that puzzle, they are done. And, you know, I guess we should say you're welcome to the rest of the teams in the NFL on how to shut this down because, you know, yards after catch, I touched on this prior to the game in a post as well, too, how deadly Welker and Gronkowski have been after the catch this year. Welker led the league coming into this game, and yesterday he had all of 3 yards after the catch yesterday, and Gronkowski lit him up on 2 plays after the catch, but when you total up the stats, it's like 90-something yards yak yesterday on 24 catches, which equates to about 3-point-something a catch, which is right where it needs to be. So, you know, that's the blueprint on how you beat the Patriots. You spread them out. We basically did to them what other teams like to do to us. We spread them out and just passed the ball, and it was fun to watch.
And as we've talked about, I mean, look, you know, the Cleveland Browns did this last year, and they basically might have showed the league, you know, initially, you know, the way to attack them. But we had a very good guest, our guest on Wednesday, Greg Bedard from the Boston Globe. You know, he talked about 2 things. He talked about the Patriots yards after the catch, and then how bad their tackling has been defensively. And he was right on again. Steelers are having guys running wide open through the secondary. They were able to get yards after the catch a couple different times. I mean, one time a guy fell down and Manny Sanders got an extra 15 yards, but, you know, Heath Miller was carrying guys for, you know, 3, 5, 7 yards every time he had the ball. And again, offensively, I liked the idea of even from the first play from scrimmage, getting the ball to Mike Wallace in his hands. So if they're going to play soft coverage, well, you're going to have Mike Wallace hitting full speed about 3 strides in, and you're going to have to tackle him. So, you know, but both coordinators get big marks, Arians and LeBeau, for what they did. Obviously, at the end of the day, we talk about it when they lose. Execution at the end of the day is the final thing. So it's on the players, but good game plan and just, you know, so many things they did right. And, you know, now they get another game where they're going to have that focus again. And we'll see if they can, you know, take it out on the Ravens.
You know, what's interesting, David, now that they have put in both this, big nickel dime and this regular dime with Cortez Allen and all now. When James Harrison comes back and you're able to get Lawrence Timmons moved back inside where he belongs, you have so many options now to do on defense. You can run your base. You can run your nickel. You can run this big, big nickel. You can run this true dime. And, you know, that makes it that much harder for other teams to break you down and to game plan for you, because at any given time they can do all four of these things now, and you know, it's got to play to their advantage, especially using a lot of the things we haven't seen before against a team. You know, let's face it, the Patriots are still explosive on offense. To use it in this game like they did with the personnel that they were forced to do it in, and to run it so well, it really, you know, and the defense was not bad going into this game whatsoever anyway. So, you know, we're seeing this defense really hit the stride, and if the offense gives us anything like they have over the last few weeks here, and Ben really playing on top of his game right now, it makes you kind of wonder how we can lose, you know, the rest of the year. Of course, injuries could get in the way, and you have a bad game in here and turn the ball over and all right now, but you really have got to be excited right now, you know, what you've seen the last few games.
Yeah, and obviously your point on turnovers is key. Ben with a you know, unfortunate pass there in the second quarter. The big point there, and a couple of people have made this point, is the Steelers came right back and drove the ball right down the field and put points on the board. And that was kind of if you're going to pick a critical drive of the game, to me that was really a situation where Patriots were very rarely within one score after the end of the first quarter with that second drive. And to come back after that underthrown ball by Ben when he had Manny Sanders open in the middle of the field, to come back and put points on the board was huge. But it is, you know, if you're going to cite a remarkable stat for this Steeler team, and this is a team I think I mentioned on Wednesday of last week, that in 12 of their games last year, they recorded two or more turnovers. And again, they went without a turnover yesterday, although they played very well defensively. And I think they are now negative 10 in turnover differential. And I think that's 13-3. And it's shocking for any team to be 6-2. And if they could just kind of, you know, get that thing to revert back to the mean and get closer to neutral and maybe have a couple games where the turnovers go their way, like you said, they are going to be a very difficult team to beat the rest of the year. And look, as much as, you know, I have pretty much chalked up a playoff berth for this team, the Bengals are the surprising team in the division at 5-2. The Steelers are going to get to take care of business with them. They get them twice, and the Ravens, I think, still get them twice. So the Bengals have a lot to prove in terms of being a contender for a playoff spot in the division. But if the Steelers get through these next two games, you know, we've talked about how soft the schedule is. If you take care of business here, where there'll be two division games, you're going to be 8-2, and it's, you know, then you're legitimately playing for home field advantage the whole way through.
Yeah, the only really scary game after that right now, you know, looks to be the 49ers, and they look to be for real. Who knows what the Rams will become by the time we get to play them? They had a great showing, really shocked the Saints yesterday, for sure. I didn't see that one coming there, especially with the backup quarterback AJ Feely at the helm there. But yeah, I mean, the takeaways, normally you would see, you know, they're last in the league right now, negative 10 differential, and that normally does not bode well. That just shows how good this defense has been, you know, even without getting turnovers. And like you said, there's going to be a few more along the way. I cannot see them going the whole season with just three turnovers all year. Unfortunately, the one Kiesel caused yesterday, that doesn't count because it just goes as a safety and all like that. Realistically, that was a turnover, though. But they're going to get theirs, I think, you know, sooner or later. Ball's bound to hit up in the air. They're not forcing any fumbles this year, but hey, you know, you're going to take what you can get there. But it is quite a shocking stat. They're sitting down there at negative 10 differential right now.
So Dave, I was watching Merrill Hodge do some game breakdown today on ESPN, and I blow a little bit hot and cold on Merrill Hodge. I mean, obviously as a former Steeler, I got, you know, positive feelings for him, but I think he's occasionally off the mark. But he went out and made the comment that this Steeler offense is a better team without Hines Ward on the field, and I tweeted that, you know, I can't disagree with that. Now, does Hines Ward add value as a blocking receiver? Certainly. Maybe the best there's ever been in the game. Does Hines Ward offer value, add some value in the red zone? Yeah, I think he does. But if we're talking about, you know, an offense running 60 to, you know, 80 snaps, whatever it may be over the course of any given Sunday, you know, I'm not sure Hines Ward should be on the field more than 25 of those snaps now, because Antonio Brown is just proven, you know, week after week to be incredibly dynamic. Like I said, he made another great catch yesterday. And Manny Sanders is a guy who you've pointed out that he can take care of the blocking. And I think he, at the end of the day, his ceiling might even be higher than Antonio Brown. He missed a little bit of the preseason. But those two guys, and you throw in Mike Wallace, and it is unbelievably kind of promising for the future.
Yeah, and, you know, another thing that Hines Ward bring is third down conversions. Usually a lot of his catches move the chains. He's got an uncanny ability of finding that soft area in the zone.
They were 10 for 16 yesterday. They were awfully good at it again yesterday.
Yeah, and that's a testament to the youth, you know, with the way those kids are playing. Antonio Brown still makes mistakes. I think I saw two of them yesterday. But you know what? He looks damn good making those mistakes. And I think then gets aggravated with him, and I think they'll work it out. I think it's just a matter of getting his IQ a little bit higher, to football IQ, that is, to recognize some of these things he should be recognizing. I think he kind of gets caught up in the moment at times, because, you know, heck, he still caught nine of how many catches did he have yesterday? Nine of he was targeted 15 times yesterday. Of course, been through a couple of those low. We talked about some of that accuracy there, but he's fast as a devil too. It was good to see him. Believe it or not, that's his first receiving touchdown yesterday. You would kind of think he would have had a couple more, you know, regular season, as dynamic as he's been this year. But Sanders caught five of eight balls thrown his way, and I was kind of on these kids and Ben a couple of weeks ago. If you remember, I said, hey, Ben's completion ratio is not where it's been. It's because he hasn't been on the same page with Brown and Sanders. He was running about a 42% completion ratio to these two, but boy, have they really improved on that since I wrote that post. And yeah, well, it just goes to show you that they're making a transition, and by no means I don't think they lose anything when Ward's on the field, but it definitely, there's enough evidence out there that you could actually give Ward some time off, and put Sanders on the field in his spot to kind of help preserve him a little bit, especially if we're making a deep run into the playoffs.
Yep. And then I don't know if we've touched on a lot of guys individually and looked at things, but let me just throw a couple thoughts at you. Chris Carter, and what was your thought of generally from what you've seen of the offensive line play? And, you know, Isaac Redman, we people have been very quick to praise Redman, and generally I think he's been very good this year. Seven carries for 11 yards, some of them short yarded situations, but obviously the stats are a little bit flipped. Mendenhall has the big yards per carry average, and Redman wasn't particularly effective.
Well, you got to look at the situation, as you said, and the people fail to do that. They'll damn sure, if that 1.6 number was sitting there with Mendenhall this morning, they'd be all over him. But they're willing to turn their head when Redman does it. Redman still runs hard in the middle. He still falls forward. About the only bad thing I saw with Redman yesterday was trying to run too quick with that pass yesterday, and he ended up dropping the pass. But he made up for it. He had a great block outside. On a bubble screen when he was lined up out there, that allowed, I forget who it was, extended that run outside there.
Did you remember the one Manny Sanders had as well, where he hit the guy over?
Oh yeah, he flipped him. Absolutely, yeah,
flipped him.
Yeah, he had two great blocks. You know, he blocks really. We've seen him make those crackbacks inside before and all like that. Kind of a la Hines Ward likes to do sometimes. We haven't seen any of those in a little while, basically because he hadn't been in enough situations to do that, or when the play, you know, had a play develop where that was called for. But out on the edges, sometimes, man, he is good at getting down at those corners' feet and knocking them up off their feet. And he showed that one or two times yesterday, and that's so fun to see because, you know, Hines Ward built a reputation in this league, not only being a solid, reliable receiver, but also his ability to block. And you can just see that being passed on, and, you know, and Sanders showed us this in his rookie season, so it's not like this is new. You mentioned Chris Carter's name too. That kid has a hell of a motor, man, and if he could just get a little bit stronger and get him a little inside move going, instead of relying so much on his speed right now, he's going to be just fine outside. And, you know, maybe Jason Worlds, I don't know, maybe Jason Worlds spends another 2 years on special teams. Now, of course, I'm being a little critical on him. The guy has yet to see the field very much, but I think at this point we'll see how the participation stats come out when I get those in for my boys later this week. But I think Carter already has more on-field snaps his rookie season right now than Worlds does in the defense in 1.5 seasons.
Yeah, no question. Jason Worlds, you know, look, I'm not going to write I know you're not either. We're not writing the guy off. The guy's been injured, and unfortunately for him, he's been injured while there's been opportunity to get some playing time. But I got to tell you, I was impressed with Chris Carter as well. He was in there, you know, the unfortunate offside penalty where he jumped down there, the goal line. But he was in there disrupting things, making things happen. You know, I'd like to watch the tape again and see how much of that, because Woodley was so dominant while he was in there, and how much of that was just weakness on the right side of the Patriots line, and how much of that was both of those guys playing exceptionally well. But we touched on Ziggy, and it's nice to have Casey Hampton back in there, although he didn't have a ton of snaps either. He's a presence in the middle of that defense. We've seen guys like Kevin Falk, you know, chew up the Steelers over his career. He has really been a guy who's done a lot of damage against this team. And, you know, the Steelers did a nice job of containing him. The Patriots really didn't have much of a ground game to go to. And you know, all those guys defensively deserve props. But it's when Woodley went out, as being as dominant as he was during the course of the game, getting his two sacks, you wondered how the defense was going to hold up. And honestly, it held up just fine.
They sure did. And one thing I wanted to ask you about is why, and it kind of surprised me, and maybe it was because of the noise in the place and all like that, but I kind of was worried about them going in, catching our base defense, because their best matchups that they could have had, the Patriots offense that is, would be catching us in a base defense there and working against Sylvester and Foot in the middle there and creating those mismatches. My biggest fear coming into this game is he'd catch us in base, he'd get into that no huddle, we wouldn't be able to sub a sub package in or something like that, and he'd be able to eat up chunks of yardage that way. What was it that loud in there in the game that you think maybe he couldn't have his silent counts and all like that going?
I think as the game went on, it definitely was loud. I think, you know, the Patriots had four false start penalties, a couple of them on Logan Mankins. You know, the scoreboard operator was getting the fans fired up with that, counting their false starts and saying the crowd effect. Definitely as things went on, I mean, I know Brady was doing a lot of walking around at the line of scrimmage, making sure they had things, they had the play calls correct. And, you know, what I noticed is while they went no huddle a lot of the time, there was no hurry up. This was not, they were no huddle, but he was definitely taking his time trying to get his reads and making sure the play call was out there. So it was an effort, obviously, to keep the personnel groupings as they were for the Steelers defensively, but not a lot of effect. I mean, I don't remember seeing Casey Hampton on the field much at all in the second half, that just as I think back over the game. But, you know, I, you know, just so many things were done well there. And my concern going through kind of at the end of the first half was, even though the Steelers are containing these wide receivers, there's enough there, particularly with Gronkowski in the middle of the field, that the Steelers need to get some pressure. And really the second half, I thought they did a better job of that. And they did a good job of disguising guys, but a lot of the time, and this is what has killed the Steelers in my mind when I think about their defense over the past 5 years, a defense that's been the best in the NFL, is when they send three guys, and sometimes when they send four guys on long third down conversion situations, they're not getting pressure, and their corners would eventually get beat just because you can't cover guys for, even with eight guys in coverage, you can't cover them for 7, 8, 9 seconds. And that didn't happen yesterday. And that, to me, is the best thing about this defense versus some of the defense we've seen in the past. And maybe you can look at it, and I'll look at it more as we go forward here the rest of the year. But I do think playing a little more press coverage, a little more man coverage helps in those situations, even if you're only going to bring three guys. And I think that did make a big difference yesterday.
Yeah, and let me preface my comments about the base defense there first, because the key drive I thought they were going to do that in was the second drive after they were down 10-0 there, because your observations were exactly right. Casey Hampton was not on the field much, and neither were Stevenson Sylvester after that second drive, because they played base, let's see, 7 times during those first two drives, I think, and only like three more times the rest of the game there. So that was the key drive there. But I like the man coverage and all like that. I fully was one of the things I was kind of suggesting that they do this week with Ike in particular there. That press off the line really created problems for him, and it gave the defensive line plenty of time to kind of get home there. And Woodley is just a beast right now off that edge. And of course, you know, he was going against Vollmer and that rookie, I think, over there. I think they kept swapping him out over there at right tackle, because neither one of them were doing a damn good job over there. And maybe Chris Carter's success was a little bit based on that. We'll see, going forward on that. But the scheme was absolutely great. And like I mentioned a little while ago, when you get Harrison back and can actually start getting pressure, good pressure off that other side, because, let's face it, Timmons just not built to rush the passer on the out.
Timmons was invisible yesterday. If you're going to, I'm not going to say he had a bad game, because I didn't look closely enough again at the tape, but he was the one guy in the defense. I walked out and I turned to my brother and said, I remember seeing Timmons in on one play where, he had an impact.
Yeah, he did good about forcing a run inside a few times that they ran. He didn't really get a lot of good pressure off the edge. I thought he had a pretty good game overall. It just was not dominating, not a lot of pressure on the quarterback and all. Most of your pressure came up the middle, especially on a stunt by Woodley there. You saw Kiesel with a couple of stunts real nicely done there, and of course, Ziggy Hood as well. So it's going to be a good problem to have when you have Harrison come back over that side. You switch Timmons out, back to where he belongs. He's better in coverage anyway, and making plays out, not having to take on blockers and making plays on the run there. It's going to give you a lot of freedom that you're not going to be afraid maybe to pull a Farrier off the field and to get into this dime package and all going forward, even though, Farrier normally stays on the field during these situations. But now I think you can even feel comfortable pulling Timmons off the field a few plays if you want to, going forward.
I think you're so right there. I think this scheme maybe gives LeBeau the confidence to play more man. I want to give Keenan Lewis and William Gay all the credit. You have pointed out maybe the Patriots receivers aren't that good, and I think that's right. I think Ocho Cinco was on the field for one play where he ran a go route, a kind of a post, and Keenan Lewis was flying down the field with him. Brady threw it 10 yards over their head because there was no chance Ocho Cinco was getting open on the play. The other thing is, I've got the TV on here, and they're showing some of the highlights of the game with on primetime, and they're breaking down the young receivers. I think it said the three guys had 207 yards. Brown, Wallace, and Sanders had 207 yards receiving amongst them, and they showed that block Sanders made when they threw the bubble screen to Wallace, and he comes flying out and flips the guy over. But the thing that also, one of the advantages of being in the game, is Wallace went for about 10 yards on that play down the field, and somebody ran and helped him up. Two of the Steelers' offensive linemen ran over to Manny Sanders and high-fived him on that play over by the Patriots sideline. It was awesome.
That is fun to watch. And I know, hey, if we don't talk about this one thing here, people are going to get on us here, and I'm willing to hear opinions on this. What happened on the last offensive possession with the Steelers down there? Were those planned sacks, do you think, or do you think it was just poor execution and Arians was just going through for the nail in the coffin there, trying to throw the ball after coming out of the two-minute warning?
Absolutely poor execution on both plays. One is, when I was giving my 2 cents to the crowd stands, sitting around me, was that I'd like to see them run the ball on second down, and then if they need to throw it on third down, I'm fine with that. I thought kind of slow developing play action against the blitz, when you knew they were probably going to blitz, I thought slow developing play action on second down was just a bad choice. And I don't think they in running the play action, you take the back out of the position to be in to pick up the blitz since it came from the edge. So he's now out of the play. So I just thought that was a bad play design. Third down, I don't know what the hell happened, because the kid came off the left side and Ben turned and he looked right at him. I mean, there was nothing for Ben to do. The kid came untouched. And again, I thought it was bad play design. When you know the Patriots are going to blitz again, they've been blitzing a lot of the game. They just had success on second down. I don't think they're going to let Ben sit back there. And so to not have a tight end on that side or a back who's able to chip on that side, I think they screwed it up and they got a little bit lucky. Now, let me just throw in the last part of this is I think Ben made excellent decisions not to throw the ball away. Oh. Better off taking the sack and the 25 seconds that comes with that than, you know, worrying about the yardage. And I know people say, okay, they're in field goal range, but I'm not all that comfortable kicking a field goal, a 40-some yard field goal. It does win the game for you. It puts you up 9, but, you know, if you miss it or something bad happens, well, you got a short field and they're only down 6. So you can actually lose the game. So I did like the fact that he ate it on both plays.
Yeah, you know, I guess when you're coming out of, first down on that final drive, there's 2:10 left, and they're out of timeouts already. So first down, you run up the middle with Redmond for -1 yards. And like you said, they knew the run was coming. They're just running into the pile there at that point. So the clock stops. The Patriots are out of timeouts, and you're at the 2-minute warning there. Now, on second down, if you run again, you're going to run another, 40 seconds.
Yeah.
40 seconds. And then I guess on third down, you're going to run again. Let's say you did run in again there.
Yep.
You're still going to give them the ball back with the same amount of time, basically, aren't you, if you don't pick up that first down?
Well, they're going to get it with – so let's say you punt and the punt takes 10 seconds. So that's going to give them the ball with 30, which is essentially what happened. It was a little less than 30. Maybe even a little less than that, actually, when the Patriots, would they have 13 or 19?
When they got the ball back, they had 29 seconds.
29, yeah, so 30. So, you know, if you do throw it away, you know, they get a chance to have.
Oh, no, they had 19 seconds when they took possession. You're right. It was 29 seconds when the Steelers punted.
Yeah, so basically both those plays took 45 seconds. And if you throw the ball and they both take 10 seconds, well, you know, you're adding over a minute to the clock. So the Patriots are going to get it with 1:20 down 6. And I'm not comfortable with that. So I think Ben made a great choice to eat the ball on both plays, because, you know, as much as the Steelers bottle the Pats up, you give them 1:20 and no timeouts, you know, maybe it's not 50-50, but it's certainly not 0-100 that they all score.
Yeah, I think, and that's where everybody's curious is why, you know, of course, if they just run into the line twice there and they punt it back to them, I think you're sitting at the same clock there. And I think what Arians and Ben, and I'd like to hear further explanation of this, have not heard, before I make a decision on this of how bad maybe it was. Maybe they were just trying to pick up one more first down and ice this game, you know, instead of.
Well, I think if you have, it's a little bit, I think if they have, one of the backs or Heath wide open and you know, it's going to have to be a very safe throw, obviously. So I'm guessing that was the idea, but I'm with you. I'd like to hear what they thought.
Yeah. And I think, Ben, they'll probably ask Ben about it. And of course, Arians probably this coming week on Coordinator Thursday. There's when we hear from those guys. But let's wrap it up here and talk about a few injuries real quick. Woodley, of course, had the hamstring injury. You know, he's saying he's going to play, but I think it's too early, way too early to even worry about his game status. Tomlin will tell us more on Tuesday, and we'll see how the practice schedule goes. Participation goes forward there. The only other injuries, Marcus Gilbert, he came back big gutsy coming back into that game after rolling that ankle up. Keenan Lewis suffered a shoulder injury. Ike Taylor suffered a shoulder injury. I was real worried when he went down there with Ike Taylor with that stinger on top of it there. So look for those guys to be kind of limited this week and heading up into this game against the Ravens and all. But we look to have a pretty clean bill of health. We ought to start getting some of these guys coming back pretty soon, which will be good. And that meaning Chris Hoke, possibly Jason Worlds. There's rumor that James Harrison may or may not get the green light to go this week as well. So, boy, playing great football at the right time and getting healthy right at the right time.
Yeah, good stuff. And I'll just add, at the game, the Ike Taylor thing was very scary to see, because when you see an opposing player react to the team's bench to get the training staff out, you know things, and Ike was motionless on the field. And I'll tell you, immediately two Steelers went down, took their helmets off like they do when they go down, take a knee to pray, and a lot of guys getting close to him to see, you know, exactly what the situation was. And as I said, one of the Patriots was waving to the Steelers staff to get on the field. So there was a lot of concern in the stadium in terms of how things went. And I'm absolutely, you know, obviously thrilled, but absolutely shocked by how quickly, you know, he managed to get up and walk off the field.
Yeah, and got himself back in the game a little while later on top of it. That's just how Ike Taylor is. That guy's destined to get to the Pro. It is actually going to be a crying shame if he does not get voted to the Pro Bowl this time around, because he has really shut down some great receivers through these first, eight games of the season here thus far. And real quick about the Ravens, boy, Arizona didn't do us any favors yesterday, did they?
No, it didn't do us any favors. 24-6 at the half, or 24-3 if it were maybe at the half, and they got booed off their home field. But Anquan Boldin really had a big second half, and you know, Ray Rice gets a couple touchdowns, and you know, it just means this game is as big as it always is.
Yeah, exactly, and it's going to be a good one to break down, and we'll start breaking that down this week. Hopefully have another beat writer on Wednesday and do what we do here.
That's it, Dave. Great stuff as always. And thanks to all our listeners for listening to episode 37 of The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.